This is the Eurosnob Podcast.
So, once again, everybody, the Arsenal that we know and love and hold so dearly to our hearts comes into a game where we need the points. Teams around us are dropping points. The door is wide open for us to get back into contention for the title. And we go and fuck it up. Alex, man, why in the world do we ever expect anything other than what we get from this team?
That was quite the intro, first of all. That was a
little fired up, man.
No, I feel you. Trust me. You know, the funny thing is, well, it's not funny. It's sad. I went into yesterday's game. You know, it was on while I was at work, so I recorded it. But I recorded it with full confidence that, oh, you know, we're going to take care of business. And then, you know, if we just win this one and Chelsea, you know, drops points against Liverpool, we go into our game with Chelsea just needing a win to bring it within three. Obviously didn't work out like that. And it is exactly like you said. I'm not sure why I expected anything different, because when there's a chance to pull close, Arsenal somehow find a way to screw it up. And it was a frustrating thing. It was a frustrating game because of the inevitability I felt after like 10 minutes. It was just one of those games you knew once you started watching, you're like, oh boy, something's going to go wrong here.
You know, there's a moment in almost every game, regardless of what sport it is, where something happens negatively generally. Something's going to happen. The game kind of rests on a knife edge, as they say, going a little cliche on you guys. Where that situation comes up and you make a decision, every single player on the field makes a decision inside themselves. How are we going to respond to this? And time again, this team, for whatever the reason, doesn't show the spine and backbone to, you know what, to do what needs to be done and get back in a game. I mean, that was what? 10 minutes into the game we give up the first goal?
I think so. It was around the 10th, yeah.
Yeah, and it's Watford, for God's sake. I mean, you're one down, and they're not good. Why is that a situation where, you know, you go into a shell? That's what they did. That's what they always do.
Yeah, you saw their heads drop after the first goal. It's almost like, oh, God, here we go again. Which is weird because, you know, we've had these games this season where, you know, we've come back to either win or draw, but there was something, you know, their heads just dropped. And I will say, like, for their first goal, when Kabul lined up for that free kick, I just had this awful feeling. And this was having not known the result. I just had this awful feeling. I saw him line up. I said, somehow this is going to go in.
Well, you knew what was going to happen. Clearly, they were going to lay it off to him and he was going to shoot. There's no disguise of that whatsoever. The wall wasn't set up right. Cech was in a weird position. It just didn't, like you said, it didn't look right.
First of all, it's not the first time this season that we've said Cech was in a weird position. But that goal, I won't blame on him. That was, you know, that deflection was pretty nasty.
Oh, please. You're not, dude, yes, it was a deflection. But you know what? Had that shot been pegged for the corner initially, Cech never would have got there. And he should have gotten there from that spot. You know, like, sure. It was deflected. Are you going to expect him to make the save? You would sure as hell like him to. The top keepers in the world get a piece of that. And don't get me started about the Ramsey hate, which I'm sure I'll dive into that at some point in time tonight. But people blaming that on Aaron Ramsey for deflecting the ball, like, give me a break, man. Like, we're going to save that. But yeah, check. Like, if that was going directly in the corner, he didn't have that covered. He was slow moving off his feet, and I swear it looks like his feet are in cement half the time.
I do think his reflexes have gotten a lot slower since he got to Arsenal. It could just be age catching up with him. I'm assuming that's what it is. You know, I can't really speculate as to whether he would have stopped it or not, because I think maybe he judged where he thought the shot was going, a power shot. I don't think he thought it was going right in the corner. It did. I mean, it is what it is. You know, we can certainly get into the goalkeeping debate, but just the reaction from the team to the goal is what troubled me the most. Because pretty soon after that, a giveaway in midfield leads to a break, and you know, the defense completely falls apart. And it's not something that I think can be pinned on one player. There's several players who I think were at fault for the early goals we gave up. But I mean, that entire first half performance was one of the worst of the season. And I feel like too often we're having this conversation. That's a problem, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly no doubt about that. I mean, that second goal, where do you start with the blame? I mean, first of all, the throw-in from Gabriel was just mind-boggling that you would even put Ramsey in that position. The reaction of Ramsey after he lost possession to turn and look at Gabriel like, what the hell, instead of making his first reaction to getting back. I mean, that's my only fault in him for that. I mean, I'm not trying to say that's not a big fault, because it really is. By the time he turned back, Kapu was a good 5 to 10 yards past him, and there's no way he's catching up to him, even if he does track that back. But Coughlin, who's in the team to be this quote-unquote destroyer and break up plays, God, that word pisses me off with him, that he gets thrown around that he's a destroyer, lets Kapu run past him, falls for this weak little hesitation move. Then he takes the ball wide on Mustafi, and nobody gets a challenge in. Not to mention Koscielny not being aware that Deeney is coming in on the ball, and Nacho and Monreal is in the middle of nowhere. I mean, the whole thing from start to finish was just horrendous.
I was going to say, you basically just discussed the entire back six in one play. And that should tell you something about what happened there. It was a complete clusterfuck from everyone involved, really.
Honestly, I don't mean to interrupt, but the entire game was that way, where nobody seemed to know what they were doing. Nobody seemed to be communicating. It was bickering. There was no communication. It was just people yelling at each other.
Yeah, and I mean, starting with the defense, I would say that was Mustafi's worst game of the season by far. And, you know, I got kind of tired of hearing about, oh, we haven't lost a game with Mustafi in the side yet. We haven't lost because, you know, somehow he makes our defense so impenetrable. I think the results papered over a lot of cracks coming into this game, for starters. A lot of the late goal games, like against Burnley or you know, other games throughout the season where we scored these late goals to get a result, I think it really papered over a lot of cracks in the side. You know, certainly we'll go into it in more depth, but just kind of listing them out right now, you know, the lack of build-up play in the midfield, our inability to cope with a press, our lack of mobility at times up front, you know, when a certain player is playing, and we all know who I'm referring to. It's just all these issues that have kind of been boiling to the surface, and you kind of saw the result yesterday. It was a game that you should comfortably take 3 points away from, even if you had to rotate the squad a little bit. And yet I wasn't surprised by what happened. That's the sad part. It was basically a repeat of Bournemouth away several weeks ago. You know, you're down 2-0 within the first 20, 25 minutes. Confidence is shattered. You're chasing the game. You then have to make substitutions to kind of compensate for that. Then, of course, you lose Ramsey to injury, which only exacerbates the problem. I mean, I don't know, man. It's hard to kind of coherently break this down and try to be somewhat calm about it, because it was incredibly frustrating to watch.
Yeah, I mean, there comes a point where you just have to kind of throw your hands up and say, I don't know. I mean, again, I don't understand the decision to play Olivier Giroud centrally. We've seen this team be so much more dynamic going forward when he's not in there. Yes, he's been scoring goals of late, but our team, we haven't looked good with him there as of late. I mean, so he scores a goal a game. Well, the way our defense plays, that's not going to be enough to win you the game. We need two. We need three goals in a game if we're going to win it. And you're not getting that with him because he stands there like an idiot and gets pissy when somebody pushes him and he falls over. I mean, for God's sake, dude, you're huge. You're Jack. Knock somebody on their ass for once. Don't look to the ref every second. Like,
no, it's harsh, but I definitely see the merit in that. I think I kind of figured they were going to start Giroux because at the weekend we started Welbeck, Perez, and Alexis. And I figured Welbeck was going to be rested for Chelsea because he's coming off that knee injury. Alexis didn't start on Saturday. Theo did. So Welbeck, Theo, and Lucas. So I kind of figured that Theo and Welbeck would be rested because they're just coming off injuries and we wanted to take care of them. And to a certain extent, I get that. Actually, I do, especially with Welbeck coming off a long-term injury. But then why not play Lucas up front? You know, who gives you that mobility, who gives you that ability to get in behind and link up. It's like you said, and we've talked about this before, Giroux, you know, for all of his strengths, his lack of mobility is, it really hinders our game and the way we want to play. And you see how that affects everyone else on the team, not the least of which is Ozil, who, by the way, was pretty lousy yesterday too. But Alexis, you know, Alexis wasn't great. Iwobi was probably our brightest player, I'd say. So kind of not to belabor the point, but when I saw the lineup come out, I still thought, though, all right, this should get the job done. You know, Watford's kind of a physical side. Maybe that's why we're playing Giroud, to offer that extra threat on set pieces, but we should still be able to get in behind them.
You know.
But the problem is Watford set up in a deep block, and so that relied on a buildup that we didn't necessarily have.
But did we not know that's what they were going to do? Isn't that what everybody does? Why would we expect them to do anything different?
Well, you and I knew that, but apparently Arsene Wenger missed that memo.
And I just, you know, if you're going to start Giroud, don't start Alexis. Put him on the bench. Rest him. There's absolutely no excuse for having Alexis in your team and not starting him up top. None. It makes no sense to me. And I'll always be the one that says that a Premier League manager, especially one of the caliber of Arsene Wenger, has forgotten 5 million times as much about football than I've ever known, or I will ever know. Like, the man's a genius, but I just don't get it. You know, and I know we've been on this point for a few episodes now because Giroud's been playing, but I still can't seem to get any sort of an answer. I mean, on a positive note, he pulled him at halftime, which is a very un-Arsene Wenger-like move.
Yeah, no, I think it kind of gets into a Twitter discussion I was having with our boy Bill earlier today, in the sense that it is sort of a cycle with Giroud that he'll come off the bench and he'll score some goals. So then Wenger thinks, oh, well, now he's in form. Now I got to start him. So he'll come into the side and he'll score a goal here and there. But, you know, we'll struggle with our buildup. We'll struggle with our pace of play. So then Wenger will sit him down, use him as an impact sub. He'll score goals as an impact sub. Rinse and repeat. And I just don't think that Wenger sees Giroud's role as solely being a super sub. And that's kind of where the disconnect is happening, in my opinion. I think that he should be a super sub. I think he's a good asset to have, certainly. I mean, the guy's a French international. Let's not act like he's, you know, Darren Bent or something like
that. No, and if you've listened to any episodes in the past, you guys know, you know my feelings on him. I don't really need to get too far into it again, but he's an incredibly valuable player. He's one of those players that if he played for any other club in the Premier League, we'd look at him and say, hey, he would do a great job for us. Why don't we buy him? You know, we would be doing that. He's a great player to have in the side, but he's not as good as Alexis. There's no arguing that.
I don't even think it's it's an issue if he's not as good as Alexis, because I think you can look at Lucas Perez and say the same thing. He's obviously not as good as Alexis, but if you play him up top, you'd still get that mobility that we need for our game to thrive. So I don't think it's a just compared to Alexis thing. I think it's a how is this person influencing the game and how is he making the players around him better? I think our game becomes so incredibly predictable when he plays, you know, because it shifts Alexis out, you know, wide, where his game is far more limited because he's, you know, he's always going to try and cut in and shoot, you know. When he's playing as a striker, he can drop deep to receive the ball. He gets involved in the buildup. He gets on the end of things. He can then drift wide and open up space for everyone else to come in. And I think that's why you've seen him thrive with Theo and Welbeck in previous seasons. So I think you've seen signs of how our system can work when the right pieces are put in the right place. The problem is those right pieces aren't being put in the right place. So I think in this particular instance, Arsene Wenger gambled away the sure 3 points by playing the right lineup against Watford in the hopes that he could get stretch things really thin and get 6 points this week, and it just didn't work out.
And to be fair, we needed 6 points from this week. So to go into it with any other mindset really would be at a detriment to us. And I'm not trying to say that a club of our level would ever go into a two-game stretch and not play for 6 points. Obviously, we're going to play for 6 points, but in rotating, you know, like you said, I think he did the right thing. Just in my opinion, if you're going to play Alexis, play him at striker. If you want to rest him, rest him. I mean, he should never step foot on the left wing again in Arsenal colors. My personal opinion, and I think a lot of people agree with that. I think that's kind of the general sentiment across, you know, any reaction that I've certainly seen. But, I mean,
well, just think about how Lucas feels. Like, he comes in against Southampton. Granted, it was their largely a squad team for Southampton, but he comes in and he's brilliant. Everything good we did against Southampton on Saturday, he was at the heart of it. And then he gets shifted out to the bench. And, you know, I heard that argument about Oxlade-Chamberlain. I think that situation is a little bit different because Oxlade-Chamberlain generally doesn't play midfield. So it was just a situation
where play midfield this weekend.
Yeah, that too. But it was just a situation where we didn't have many healthy midfielders. Obviously, even less so now. But I think that's slightly different, you know. But certainly the midfield was another issue that really kind of was at the forefront of the Arsenal Twitter discussion yesterday, and I'm curious to get your take on that just in the game, but then I know you've got some other thoughts you wanted to get into.
I'm going to take it right to the one player who for some reason just takes more ridiculous abuse than honestly any player I remember seeing get. Obviously, I'm talking about Aaron Ramsey. Now, the thing about Ramsey for me, again, if you listen to the podcast, you know I'll go and say it. I'm a Ramsey fanboy. I think he's a brilliant footballer. Yeah, he tries to do too much fancy shit. I'll give you that. But I think he's a spectacular player. I think he's supremely talented. But I don't know that he's ever going to make it at Arsenal with the current system that we have set up. And, yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to come to that conclusion because I think he could go to pretty much any club, any big club, bar maybe Barcelona and Real Madrid. I think he could fit into any other team across the globe and just do spectacular things if in the right system. And you might want to click the little mutey button there.
Oh yeah. Sorry. Just minor side note. Both of us are a little bit under the weather, but We're kind of toughing it out for you guys, the listeners. So, so if I sound even more annoying than usual, well, that's, yeah, it's probably true. But just when you're talking about Ramsey being in the right system, maybe what do you think the right system is for him to kind of best utilize his strengths? Because people might say, like, look at Wales and how kind of how they set up and where he had this free reign. And, you know, Wales kind of – I don't know. I don't remember exactly what formation they played. Wales kind of played more like a 4-3-3, like a straight 4-3-3.
Wales kind of played like a four guys in the back, everybody else in midfield, Ramsey and Bale, go run and do your thing. I don't know how real structured they were for those two. But the 4-3-3, the system that you're kind of talking about, 4-3-3, like a true three midfield system, not the – which really is a – I mean, when you say a 4-2-3-1, the way we've played it a lot this year has been a 4-4-2. I mean, when you think of the way Ozil's essentially been playing a second striker, when he has somebody who is a dedicated holding midfielder that covers that space and that's his job, and Ramsey is allowed to go and play box to box, he's spectacular. He really is. You know, but in our current system, we don't have that player that is either coached to do it or disciplined enough to do it. Now,
or good enough to do it.
True. But you know what? I think if you're referring to Coughlin with that slightly potentially backhanded comment about
him, it wasn't slight at all. That's definitely who it was.
I think he's more than capable of playing that deepest role of a three-man midfield where your sole job is to protect the back line. I think he's perfectly capable of that. But when you're playing what is essentially with two central midfielders, you need to have two central midfielders that can cover a ton of ground, which honestly Ramsey can't. And I'm going to say that it has to do a lot with his injury history. I don't remember him. He almost seems to labor around the pitch nowadays, and it's kind of sad. But you need players who are capable of getting up and down the field, being smart and safe, but also aggressive with the ball at the right times, and that somebody that's like two guys that are also smart enough to know where to be defensively.
But in order for that to work, wouldn't you need – I mean, you would need someone who's good on the ball as well. You know, it's not just a question of breaking up play and being deep. You need someone who's good on the ball. So I think conceivably – and we might have talked about this before, but conceivably, you know, if everyone was fit, if you had Xhaka and Coughlin healthy and not suspended, then you could play Xhaka, Coughlin with Ramsey ahead. The question then becomes, what do you do with Mesut Ozil? Which is, you know, again, something – it's one of those things where I've kind of seen the question posed more and more recently. You know, can Ramsey and Ozil both get the freedom they need but still play together? The only way I can see that really working is in a diamond setup. You know,
I think it's a flat-out no unless you put Ozil on a wing.
But the thing is, if you put him on the wing, then I don't think you're getting the best of him. You know, I don't think you're giving him the freedom he wants. Only way I see it working is in a diamond. If Ozil's at the tip of a diamond, and then you got like a Ramsey and, you know, a Ramsey and Xhaka behind, where Ramsey still has that, you know, ability to get forward, but he's got Xhaka behind, you know, next to him, and then Coughlin at the base of the diamond to break up play. But that's just not something Wenger's going to do. I mean, let's just come to terms with that. He's not going to try that. He's not someone who's tinkering with his formations to find something that works. He thinks this 4-2-3-1 is tried and tested, and he's just going to stick with it until
– I think
– actually, reason, I don't even – there's no until. He's just going to stick with it.
He's going to stick with it as long as Mesut Ozil's in his team. It's that simple. This formation – it's a formation that accommodates a true number 10 is built around Mesut Ozil.
But I don't think it's just an Ozil issue, because we have the same thing with Fabregas. We played with the true number 10 when he played. You know, because okay. towards yeah. the end, the last few years of his career, Fabregas moved from a traditional central midfielder to a number 10, and then he always played with the double pivot behind him. You know, the last season it was Alex Song and Jack Wilshere. So we've always kind of had our setup that way.
That's true, but let's look at those two players that were playing behind Fabregas there. Both Wilshere and Song were athletic, could get up and down the pitch, could pick a pass, could defend and stick in on a tackle. They were versatile enough to play that role, you know? And part of the problem we have, and it's not so much Mesut Ozil being the problem, the problem is we don't have the midfielders behind him to fit into that system.
Then if you're going to build this club around Ozil and Sanchez, then you better go out and buy those midfielders. And it also makes you think, what do you do with Aaron Ramsey then? You know, I know that you've got some thoughts on this that we've discussed off camera and off audio, but kind of what are your thoughts on Ramsey's future here? Because I was thinking about that as I was driving home from work, because that's what I think about when I drive home from work.
That's fair.
You know, yeah, no, I mean, I'm not listening to music. I'm thinking about how Aaron Ramsey fits into Arsenal's future plans. I think that Ramsey might go this summer. That's just a feeling I have. His head, you know, he's mentioned wanting to play in Spain before. First of all, he's not going to get into a Real Madrid or Barcelona, but he seems like someone whose head would be turned by a big offer from abroad. And I'm not 100% sure he's happy with the situation at Arsenal. There seems to be a disconnect with him and Alexis. And he's just never seemed like someone who, you know, has been fully embraced by the fans. Unfortunately, he's faced a lot of heat over the years. He's kind of become the easy scapegoat. Now, granted, I think sometimes he deserves it, because I think sometimes his game is a little over elaborate, but other times I think he's just an easy scapegoat. So I could see him leaving. And so I could see a situation where Arsenal really needs to go into the market for not just one, but maybe two big time midfielders, because Santi Cazorla is also getting up there in age. He's got his Achilles problems. I read another report today where Arsenal's really concerned about his full recovery. So kind of what's your take on the Ramsey situation, his future at the club, not just his recent play?
For me, his future really depends on what happens with this club this summer. Excuse me. I don't want to say that I think it's going to happen, because it might. It's kind of a long shot for it to happen, but it's one of the things that we kind of talked about before we went on air. I get the feeling with this team that it's reminiscent of teams from other sports where they're building towards trying to put a championship team together, and they're going and they keep trying to add more and more pieces and get to the point where they're internally, they say, yes, we're finally there. We added the big pieces we needed. We've got the depth that we need. This is our year to make a run. And it just doesn't work. And oftentimes when that happens, teams kind of blow it up, take a step back, and reset. Now, I know it's different because of the league structures, you know, the Premier League and world football compared to an American salary-capped franchise setup. I understand that's different. But I certainly get the feeling that, and especially if Wenger goes, you could see some massive turnover at the club. So for me, you know, it's kind of a long-winded way of getting to my answer on Ramsey and saying that ultimately it's going to come down to what happens with Wenger, what happens with Ozil, what happens with Alexis. Because no, I mean, it could be they all stay and we sell Ramsey, or they all leave and we damn well better not sell him.
To your original point about, you know, you mentioned teams that kind of build, but don't get anywhere. and then kind of blow it up. I guess doing that would basically be an admission that this project has failed in some form. This project of building a new stadium and, you know, everything that came with it, the debt and having to play with a substandard squad, all of that was done with the intention of building to where we are now. Because I think this is the best squad that Arsenal's had since the Invincibles. In terms of top to bottom depth.
It's hard to argue that.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe not the top level talent kind of that that other team had, but just in terms of the depth where there's good players at every position there. And so to blow it up now would basically be admitting that especially these last 5-6 years were just a waste. And I struggle to see Wenger leaving if he thinks that this project is unfinished. But I also see the validity to your point that, yeah, it might be an admission that this project didn't, and not fail, but didn't succeed. But there's still some pieces that you can build around. Just the structure needs to change. Something needs to change because I don't think pursuing this particular course of action that we're on right now is necessarily going to lead to where we want it to lead.
I mean, I'll tell you what, if, and this is what I think the likeliest thing is going into this season. It's hard though, because Arsenal's not going to stick around for one more year. It's going to be 2 or 3 more years. That's the way it's going to, they're not just going to give him a 1 year contract, because if they give him 1 year, I don't think that helps us sign Alexis and Ozil, because then they're going to be in the same spot next year as they are right now in terms of what's going to happen with the manager. So if they decide and Arsene decides to stay and they want to keep at this project, what needs to happen is you keep everybody here, then you go out and bring in somebody like a Marco Reus, which we've once again seen linked with Arsenal.
The first of all, Marco Reus is my dream player.
Doing my little evil genius finger tapping, like I'm so excited, it would be amazing.
Oh no, because he's legitimately my favorite player in the world, I think. But the worrying thing is, I've only seen Reus mentioned and players like him mentioned as replacements, and that's really disconcerting to me, because I think you have two world class players in your team with Alexis and Ozil. You need to supplement them with other world-class players. You don't replace them. That kind of ruins the whole purpose, because I don't think if you replace Alexis with Reus, this team is any better next year. If you sign Reus and keep Alexis and Ozil, all of a sudden you have one of the best attacks in the world, bar none. You know, I think it competes with almost any team aside from maybe a Real Madrid, Barcelona, and a Bayern. But certainly in the Premier League, it would be one of the best. So I don't know. First of all, like we talked about, my feeling that one of Alexis or Ozil leaves, my gut tells me Alexis at this point. But just in general with this project and kind of blowing it up, it's tough, because I think so many fans have suffered through these years thinking, oh, once this is done, we're going to be in a position to win the title again.
Yeah, to me though, I don't know necessarily that the failings are that it would be indicative of failings on the football side of things. I know it's kind of, just bear with me for a minute on this. After we came out of the stadium thing and we signed the new deal with Puma, what happened right after we signed the new kit deal with Puma? Chelsea, United, City all announced deals that were
bigger.
Way bigger than what we had. So again, like, and there's other things like that. I can't pull up what I'm thinking to go with it, but things like that where financial and advertising opportunities, kit deals, sponsorship deals that, you know, I don't think we're getting, I don't remember where I read it, but we're not getting nearly enough with like this Emirates deal. As far as the sponsorship from them, it's far lower than the sponsorships that City, Chelsea, United, Liverpool are all getting. You know, there's the big failing, and then, you know, when they went into the whole project saying, when we come out of it, we're going to be able to compete with anybody in the world on a financial level. In my opinion, the club missed the boat on the commercial side of things. And that's what's keeping us from being able to go and say, you know what, Ozil Alexis, here's the money you want. Marco Reus, here's the money you want. Come play with them. So even though the club said, yes, we are out of this time, and Arsene said it himself too, but Arsene's always been defend the club and take the blame on himself. You know, but even though the club and him have said, yes, now we can compete with everybody, I think they've royally screwed it up, and they're the reasons that we can't. So saying that it's a failure, the whole project would be a failure, to me it's more, and you see it on the football side of things, but to me it's more on a business side, and maybe that's me just wanting to hold on to the little bit of hope that maybe something gets turned around on the football side, but I really don't. I think it's a club-wide failure more so than just on the football side.
No, I think there's certainly validity to that. And I've seen things mentioned that kind of reiterate your point about the commercial deals not being what they need to be. A lot of these deals were entered into a little prematurely, in my opinion, to where I think we could have held out for better terms. The Puma deal has just not been working out. I don't think it's provided the benefits that we thought it was going to. And so I think there's certainly something there. From a football perspective, I mean, I think Wenger had a clear vision of how he wanted things to unfold. The fact is they haven't unfolded like he wanted them to. And yet I still think he's trying to somehow get this vision he has and somehow put it into effect. And it just isn't quite working like that. And so to your point, I think this summer could be a really big transition period for the club. I personally don't think Wenger comes back anymore. I not that he'll get fired. I think he might just leave. Especially if we don't win anything. I think at that point that might be it for him. Obviously how that affects Ozil and Alexis, we'll see. I think Ozil's more likely to stay for reasons we've discussed before about him liking the city and things like that. But it's not just them. I mean, the whole club, really, there are a lot of areas that need to be addressed. Initially, a couple weeks ago, I would have said left back was the first position that needed to be addressed. But I actually think it's central midfield now, because I do think Ramsey leaves. I just, the more I think about it, I think Ramsey probably leaves. If he gets a big offer. Obviously, if no offer comes in, he probably stays. But I don't think Wilshere's future lies at the club anymore. I think he just seems to, you know, not that he's, I mean, he's doing well at Bournemouth, but I think that something is wrong with him and the club at this point. I don't necessarily see him extending his deal at the club. So I'm not sure of his long-term future, despite, you know, how much he, you know, despite the fact that he grew up in the club. And then Santi's obviously getting older. Coughlin's, I'm not going to say what I think. Elneny is what he is, solid squad player. Xhaka, I love Xhaka, but I mean, he has put himself in some bad situations this year with some fouls he's committed. And so you can't necessarily totally rely on a player like that. So I think you have to go into the market to get a real dynamic central midfielder. Obviously, it's actually a decent market right now. I think there are some players that could fit the mold. I look at a guy like Naby Keita at Red Bull Leipzig, tearing it up for them, absolutely bossing the midfield. You have Leandro Paredes at Roma. You have Youri Tielemans at Anderlecht. There are some good young central midfielders. I'm not trying to name drop to sound important, because I've mostly just seen these names on Twitter and read about them and watched some of their clips.
Hey, I've bought all of those players on FIFA before, so it's doable.
So there you go. So the point is that there are names out there, but I think you need to add a central midfielder at this point. Left back is another position. I would go for Gaia, Jose Luis Gaia at Valencia, or Ricardo Rodriguez at Wolfsburg. I would also I would say those are the two positions I'd look at. Goalkeeper is another one. I think both of us are not Petr Cech fans anymore. I kind of went off topic there, but just there is going to be a lot of transition this summer is kind of my point, my 5-minute point there.
That's, I mean, for me, either there's going to be almost no turnover in transition, or this is going to be a completely different club come the start of next season. And for me, that entirely depends on what Arsene Wenger does. If he steps down and we bring in, I'm just going to throw an Allegri, or we bring in, Atletico. Name is escaping me.
Simeone.
Thank you. I knew as soon as you said that I shouldn't have forgotten that. But it's been a long day. If we bring in one of those two managers, first of all, they're going to need different players to suit their tactical ideas. And I think you're gonna lose one, if not both, of Alexis. And you're going to definitely – I don't know. Like you said, what's going to happen with Wiltshire? What's going to happen with Ramsey? I mean, for me, it really all comes down to Wenger.
Just one thing I just kind of wanted to point out. I think – having listened to you speak through this podcast and even thinking of how I'm feeling myself, there's just a bit of resignation in both of our voices, you know, in the sense that, you know, we always have these high hopes and, you know, hope springs eternal. And yet here we are disappointed again and at the beginning of February. And I think that's how a lot of Arsenal fans are feeling right now. Just the sense of, you know, is this it for us? Is this kind of what we are now? Or are we ever going to be able to take that next step to get back to the truly elite level? I mean, do you kind of get that sense as well from the fan base? Because I've seen people who, you know, were the most staunch Arsene Wenger fans. And this isn't necessarily just a manager discussion, but just people who were very hopeful and optimistic starting to change their tune and thinking, oh my God, here we go again.
That, yeah, I mean, that's been me this season. I have been Wenger in, and if you're a Wenger out, then you need to get the hell out. Like, there's been no debate about that for me. The man's a genius. He stays as long as he wants to stay. Yeah, not so much anymore. I think that once again, even looking at all of the world-class, experienced international players that he's brought into this side in the last couple of years, and you know, you can go down the list. We don't have to do it because we all know who I'm talking about. Honestly, the majority of our side is international, like experienced international starters now. It's just not working. And what else can we do without being crazy and just saying, go buy all the best players, because we know that we can't do that. We can't compete with the biggest clubs in the world in signing players. So if we can't do that, what other options are there? You know, the common denominator is Ben Wenger. He's brought in different players, and we still, you know, the core of the spine of our team is different.
But the problems remain the same.
Exactly. The problems are remaining the same. So for me, common denominator comes down to Arsene Wenger. And that's difficult for me to get to that point, but there comes a point in time where change is needed for change's sake.
Yeah.
You know, people say you don't want to make change for just for the sake of making change, but there comes a point in time where you just got to do it. You need to.
And I can tell, and I'm the same way, you know, like I wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt for so long because of everything he's done for the club. But the when you see the same problems repeat themselves with different personnel, you have to ultimately look to the man on top. It's Arsene Wenger. When you look at what's going on at Chelsea with Antonio Conte coming in, a guy who has adapted tactically, you know, things did not necessarily work out the first few games the way he set up. You know, we tore them to shreds. Liverpool did the same. So he adapted tactically, and he's a tactically fresh manager. You can tell he gets the best out of his players. I'm not sure Arsene Wenger is that man anymore, which sucks because I thought for so many years, I thought, oh, man, the culmination of this project to build Arsenal into a super club would be when it, you know, building the new stadium and then eventually building a squad good enough to win the title. And I think the squad is good enough to win the title. I'm not sure he's a good enough manager to win the title anymore, which is a sad realization to come to. And I'll kind of let you get the last word on that before we kind of move elsewhere.
You let those words sink in there, and it's just kind of, it's got that's a pretty heavy thing, man. Like he's not a good enough manager anymore to win the league. I can't disagree with that. You see so many new managers coming into the league that adjust their tactics based on who they're playing and adjust their tactics based on who they have in their side and make changes throughout the course of a game. And the times are a time in the Premier League, you know, and he hasn't seemed like he's really adapted to that. And it's hard for me to come to that conclusion, and I'm sure it is for a lot of other people, but I think it's more clear than it ever has that now really is the time that he should go. Now, do I think he will? I reserve judgment for another month or so to see how the things shape up.
But, yeah. Well, just to kind of wrap up on that, like, I think top four is no guarantee right now. We're literally, the fifth place team is 1 point behind us. And we still have to go to Liverpool, to Chelsea, to Spurs, and then we get City and United at home. So we've got a tough.
Not to mention two Bayern ties thrown in the middle of.
Well, yeah, obviously we're gonna get eliminated there, unless barring a miracle. But the point being is that, you know, the title is gone. Even if we win on Saturday, you know, we're 6 points back. We need Chelsea to drop a whole bunch of games that we basically need to win out. So the title's gone. But now it's about securing top four. And so, you know, it's the cycle that we get mad at journalists and media and pundits for saying, but it's true. So it is exactly what you said. I think we're at that point now. Like, granted, it's the middle of the season. Obviously, you're not going to do anything now, but I think when summer comes, ideally Arsene Wenger steps aside, we appoint a long-term replacement and go from there. But you know, certainly that's something we'll wait to see unfold. You know, certainly speaking of coaching transitions, for our American listeners, the UN's mess, I can't even speak. The U.S. men's national team, had its friendly on Sunday against Serbia, in Bruce Arena's first game back in charge. This is traditionally what they call Camp Cupcake, where they call in all the domestic players and, you know, so obviously it was all the MLS guys and, you saw the guys, all the MLS people have been crying out for, like Fail Haber and Dax McCarty and Kleshchen and Matt Hedges and Walk and Zimmerman and Nagby and all that. So
well, some people saw them, but they're on some random ass channel that I don't get. So,
yeah, well, that too, but
different point for another day. But I just wanted to
throw that in there. Yeah, no, but for some reason I watched that game. Granted, you know, these MLS guys are in their preseason, so they weren't fully fit. But I mean, for all this tactical genius Bruce has been hailed with, I didn't see anything too different there. And he came out after the game and said, oh, even if we had won 5-0 or the last 5-0, it wouldn't have proved anything. He basically made a bunch of points that if Klinsmann had said, he would have been slated. Also, if Klinsmann had put out a team that got zero shots on target against Serbia's B team or C team, really, because none of Serbia's players who were based in like the major leagues in Europe even played in this game. So this really was their reserve team, and we didn't get a shot on target. Nagby looked good in flashes, but everyone else kind of looked fairly pedestrian. You know, obviously, you don't want to read too much into this. They've got another game against Jamaica this weekend. But it's just kind of funny the difference in media reaction to this result versus had it happened under Klinsmann, even earlier in his reign.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see. And to be fair, it's still that, you know, honeymoon period that they're going to give any manager. And I'm not taking away from your point there, but it'll be interesting to see how long he gets that benefit of the doubt from the media.
Well, he's from MLS, so he'll probably get it indefinitely.
Yes. Yeah. I would probably agree with that. I just think that I don't know. I could certainly see him calling in mostly MLS players and finally the minority voice that the two of us certainly subscribe to, that maybe it's not necessarily the minority, but it's a quieter voice, that's for sure. That MLS players aren't the way to go for the national team. Maybe that movement finally gets some traction when he decides he wants to stick with his MLSers and they continue to get no shots on goal.
Yeah, I mean, and it's one of those things, certainly for Bruce Arena, I want him to succeed. Don't get me wrong. I want to qualify for the World Cup. I want to continue to see U.S. soccer grow. And, you know, it's not an anti-MLS thing. It's just our fear is that he's largely going to focus on these guys because the media pushback against Klinsmann was so strong, even though Klinsmann called in as many MLS players as any other coach. You know, but, Arena's comments about the dual nationals and feeling that every player needs to know the responsibility of playing for the U.S. and all that talk, it has me worried about how the squad is going to be selected moving forward. Let's just take it on a game-by-game basis. I mean, the next World Cup qualifier is in March, I think, against Honduras. If you get a win there, that's a good start. But just from an overarching perspective of U.S. soccer, I'm just not sure Bruce wasn't hired to change the system we play. And he's definitely not going to, because I just did not see anything different in the game I watched on Sunday.
Yeah, I'm going to reserve judgment on that until the qualifiers. Bruce does not want to get fired. He wants to win games. Let's just hope that when he does get his players into camp in March and realizes, well, shit, these MLS players are not as good as these international or the European-based players in our pool, like Emerson Hyndman right now. Just, I don't know if you saw his goal.
Okay. Oh, yeah, for Rangers, yep.
Got a little left-footed volley top corner. Ooh, 2-2 games for him, man. He's coming on over there.
Oh, yeah.
So, I just want to, give him the benefit of the doubt for at least a little bit. I know I kind of jumped on him way back on the hiring and all of that, but give him the benefit of the doubt. That's the way I see it, because the guy's going to want to win games. And if he decides to stick mostly to MLS players, he's not going to win games, and he's going to be out of here in a year and a half.
It's funny you say that. I want to bring up a random Twitter exchange I found. One of the big MLS accounts tweeted something about how they didn't think Lyndon Gooch was international quality. For those who don't know, Lyndon Gooch is an American player based in Sunderland, had an injury, I believe, and he's just come back recently. And he's a winger primarily. And so this MLS account said something like, oh, I don't think he's international quality. And I tweeted at him. I said, oh, but the players we just watched are. The players that played against Serbia, the Bedoyas and the Zusis and those types. And he said, oh, yeah, they're international quality. Like, take your blinders off for 2 seconds. Do you really think that at the very least, Gooch wouldn't be as good as those guys, if not potentially an upgrade? So there's just a mindset issue right now. There's a clash, not just with, you know, the coach, but like just the MLS versus the European-based players and who's better and where should the pool be coming from. I mean, certainly we could do a whole episode on that, but...
You know, the thing about that, which really just kind of could be interesting, is that if Bruce does decide to call in a majority of the European-based and Mexican-based internationals into our team, and they do well, what's the media going to do there? Their MLS homer guy who got back into power of U.S. soccer when push came to shove, when he was trying to keep himself in a job, didn't pick the MLS players. You want to see Alexi Lalas's head explode?
Well, it's funny how quiet he was after this result. Just thinking back, because I remember when Klinsmann had his first game as coach, it was a 1-1 draw with Mexico, and Lalas was saying, oh, well, I didn't see any change in our play. That was after one game. He was noticeably silent after this one, but
favorite his tweets now. Screenshot, do whatever you have to do. Trust me, actually screenshot them, because he's the type to probably go back and delete tweets that of him talking up how Arena's going to bring in all the MLS guys and bring those all back up to him after the 2018 World Cup, when it's mostly European-based players and we have a successful run. Just – and watch his head go
– Well, we have that to look forward to in a year and a half then. But
that's my wishful thinking for tonight, boys and girls.
Yeah, exactly. But we'll certainly take this opportunity to wrap things up. I know both of us are kind of under the weather, but we certainly wanted to discuss yesterday's Arsenal result. I mean, let's be honest.
I forgot to mute that time.
That certainly merited discussion there. Before we go, though, Ian, quick prediction on Arsenal's game at the weekend against Chelsea.
You sure you want my prediction right now?
Let's hear it.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go with, first off, predicted starting lineup. You see Bellerin slot back in, Mustafi, Koscielny, Nacho in the back. Your central midfield pairing: Francis Coquelin, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. Yep.
That'll go really well.
Mesut Ozil in the 10. And you know what? I think Wenger is stubborn again, and we see Alexis left, Giroud through the middle, and Theo out wide.
Well, if we do that, we're going to lose.
3-0.
3-0, okay. I'm assuming that's 3-0 Chelsea?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. I'm going to hold out hope and say Alexis plays through the middle, and Welbeck plays wide left, Theo wide right. I do think it's a midfield you predicted, which is going to mean we're going to have no ball possession. Although, I mean, Ox looked good against Southampton's B team, but again, it was Southampton's B team. So I'll say 2-1 Chelsea. I see Theo probably getting a goal, but I see Costa and Hazard scoring for Chelsea.
If we start the way that you suggested, which is the way I think we should start as well, I just don't think we will. I think it's a little closer. I think we lose 3-2. But right now, defensively, we're all over the place. I don't see us holding Chelsea under 3.
That's sad when both of us are predicting a loss. I think that's the first time that's happened this season. But certainly on that depressing note.
But hey, there is a chance that Costa gets sent off early in the game for being Diego Costa, right?
No, it's not, because we'll probably get one of our guys sent off for touching him. That's my cynical side.
Just trying to stay positive here, man. Come on.
All right. No, yeah, that ship has sailed, I think.
yeah, after tonight's podcast.
Yeah, but You can certainly find me on Twitter at UFGoonerAJ. Ian, where can the folks find you?
That is at GunnersFan6.
Also subscribe on iTunes. It's on the iTunes link is on our Twitter account, which is at EuroSnobPod. You can find us at Facebook, facebook.com/EuroSnobPod. Please like us there.
Click the share button, guys. Anytime you see a share button and it's involving the podcast, just click
share. And anytime you see a number of stars you can select, click 5, please.
And if you don't like it, click 5.
Click 5 anyways.
Say a bunch of mean stuff in the comments.
But give as long as you give us the 5.
Yeah, definitely. I'll take the 5. Because you know what? The reviews and ratings, that's what gets you noticed. That's what gets you moving up the iTunes charts. And when iTunes sees a podcast, it gets a bunch of ratings and reviews. They push it forward and say, okay, a lot of people are listening to it, so we're going to suggest it to other people. And I don't know why I'm pushing the air.
Doing all sorts of hand motions.
Again, it's a podcast that nobody is watching this video. Yeah.
Well said. No, but in all seriousness, let's hope for the best this week. And Ian, you got any final words for the listeners?
Come on, you Gunners.
There you go. That's all you need.
All right. We'll talk to you guys soon.
All right. Have a good one, everyone.